Fay Wray isn't the only person to travel with King Kong. Curious? Welcome to Books on Air, the podcast that you don't want to miss. You're about to get a sneak preview at what goes on behind the scenes with authors. You're going to find out their secret recipe for creating a book. They'll tell you where they get their ideas, and you get the inside scoop on their next project. Want to know more? Terrific. We'll tell you where to find them on social media. Are you ready? Okay, let's meet today's author. My guest today is a true adventurer. James Henderson joins me to talk about his adventure travel book, Travels with King Kong, Overland Across Africa. Now, to say that Jim has an interesting and varied background is just an understatement. Here goes. He studied forestry at the University of Illinois. He worked as a fire lookout on Selway Mountain in the Beaverhead National Forest in Montana. He served in the Army. Thank you for your service, Jim. And he worked for the U.S. Forest Service in Washington State before returning to graduate school at the University of Washington. There, he received a master's degree in environmental planning. He worked in Alaska for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He moved to Vancouver, British Columbia, where he received a Ph.D. in satellite image analysis. And Jim worked with Environmental Systems Research Institute in Southern California. He taught software training classes in more than 80 countries, as well as managing the International User Conference, attended by over 15,000 people. He's a traveler, an adventurer, an author, and a photographer. And Jim, that leads us right into your book. Welcome to Books on Air.
Hi, Suzanne.
You have literally done so much in your life. I was just astounded when I started to read your background and your credentials. This book that we're going to talk about today, Travels with King Kong, An Overland Across Africa, is an amazing book. How did this come about?
Well, Suzanne, that's a very good question. And it started when I was at the University of Washington in Seattle, working on my master's degree. I met my best friend there. His name was John. And we spent a lot of time together over the 2 years I was at the university. And at one point, John said, well, listen, why don't we travel around the world when you graduate?
Oh, sure. Doesn't everybody do that?
So anyway, I was so involved with my master's degree thesis that I sort of let John take the lead on the arrangements, and he arranged for us to meet up with a group called SIAFU, an expedition going across Africa from London to Nairobi, and we were going to meet up with them in Morocco. So that's where we started. And to make a long story short, we spent 6 months with the group traveling across Africa.
You know, you have painted such a wonderful picture in this book. And the first thing that the listeners will see when they go to Amazon to look at the book, they'll see the cover. And I was struck when I saw the cover. It's this wonderful map of Africa. Tell me why. I mean, it's obvious that you went to Africa, but this particular map that you chose to put on the front, why did you choose that for the cover?
Well, it's interesting, Suzanne. That map comes from the CIA, believe it or not, their map database. And it looked to me like that was a It was a nice look at the continent. And as I traveled across Africa, I kept a map with me, and I marked on the map where we were going. So it only made sense to me that to put that on the front, people know exactly where we went.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful idea, because as they read through the book, I mean, as I looked at the table of contents, I have to tell you, this just sort of transported me. I saw places like Tangiers and Morocco and Algeria and Zaire and the Congo and Mount Kilimanjaro. And right away, I was just transported into the mysterious continent of Africa. This was 1974. Things were very different in 1974, right?
Oh, they were very different. And I put at the front of the book an introduction that sort of laid out kind of the logistics of how we traveled, kind of what the environment was like. And one of the things that I put in there was about communications. And the thing that is that people need to understand about this is, in 1974, there were no cell phones. There was no internet. And we had no communication for weeks at a time. So it made an environment of traveling that people would nowadays not even think about.
You know, you're absolutely right. And I'm so glad that you said that, because I think that, you know, some of our listeners may be going, oh, well, blah, 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 and thinking cell phone and keeping in touch and all that kind of stuff. And boy, that wasn't there. It wasn't available. It didn't exist.
No. And in fact, like I said, we went for many weeks without any letters, any communication outside of the group that we were in.
Now, there were 35 people in your group that went with you on this overland trip in Africa. Were there some characters that stood out?
There were several that stood out, and I mentioned them again in the introduction, talking about the sort of the demographics of the group. A group of young people from New York City, and they were called the New Yorkers. There was an older couple in their 60s from New Zealand, and Mr. Smith from New Zealand had a wooden leg, so we called him Barty.
And there were complainers, and there were, you know, I'm sure that this would almost make a stage play with the characters and the interactions. How long were you gone?
We were on this trip about 5 months from Morocco to Nairobi. And then as we arrived in Nairobi, the group split up, and that's when John and I traveled together to other parts of Kenya and Tanzania.
Now, we have to tell the listener, we've teased them and we haven't really told them, where does King Kong come in?
Well, when John and I arrived in Morocco to join this group from Siafu, that was the name of the group, they had two vehicles, two old British Army vehicles, one of which was an old bus, and someone had nicknamed that bus King Kong and written on the front of it, King Kong.
I love it. And when I saw that as the name of the book, first of all, so clever of you to use that in the title. And I could not resist. The inference that I made at the very beginning was to the 1935 version of the movie King Kong. And the actress, Faye Ray, played the role of Ann Darrow. And Ann Darrow is the woman who King Kong grabs in his hand as he scales the heights of the Empire State Building. And so I could not resist using some kind of reference back to that 1930s movie. So forgive me, Jim.
No, a lot of people would make that same reference, I'm sure.
Well, I just wanted to make sure, in case some of our younger listeners are saying, who in the world is Faye Ray and what does she have to do with King Kong? I thought perhaps I'd better say something about that. There are so many experiences that you describe in the book. The one that I found to be just breathtaking is Mount Kilimanjaro, the idea that you have climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. It just takes my breath away. Tell me about that.
Well, as we left the group in Nairobi, John and I went down to the coast of Mombasa. And I had always thought from the very beginning that I wanted to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. And we just happened to meet up with a group of four people who were planning to go the next day to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. So I said, well, I'm with you.
What was it like?
I'll be honest, it was a long, long trip. It was 5 days to get up to the summit and back.
Wow.
But it was one of the most breathtaking experiences I've had to get up on the summit at sunrise and see the sunrise over all of East Africa. It was just astounding.
You're giving me chills, Jim. You're giving me chills. I can only imagine that. Did you have experience with mountain climbing or rock climbing prior to that?
Well, I had done some in Montana, the Grand Teton in Wyoming, but Mount Kilimanjaro is a bit different. It's what's called a summit climb. So, I mean, it's a climb of about 11,000 feet. So you have to take several days to go up.
And it's one of those where you climb and you sort of adjust, and then you climb and you adjust. It's like they talk about climbing Everest, how they have to stop to go here and there. I have a friend who's, they climbed to the base camp at Mount Everest, and I know they trained for months to go do the climb. And she was telling me about, you know, how thin the air got and how they had to adjust and stop. And was it that way when you climbed Kilimanjaro?
Yes, that's why it takes, 4 days to go up and 1 day to come down, because, as you say, we stopped every late afternoon at huts. There were mountain huts there. And that's how we adjusted to the atmosphere.
I picked Mount Kilimanjaro as the one that I wanted you and I to talk about because, I mean, I just could visualize what that must be like. Is there a particular adventure that you talk about in the book that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Yes, there are many, many experiences that I had, but one of them, I think, really made a profound impact on me early in the trip, and that was the fact that the old bus King Kong had many mechanical problems. And at the beginning of the trip, everybody in the group had a job to do, cooking, loading and unloading the vehicles and so on. And I got the job of being the mechanic to basically check the vehicles every morning and evening. And little did I know that I would end up helping the drivers with the, you know, repair of the vehicle. And there was one instance I called a big breakdown where we were in the middle of the Sahara Desert. We were 100 miles from the nearest village. And all of a sudden, a valve went through the top of the piston in the engine of King Kong and basically put us out of commission.
Oh.
And it took 2 weeks to have parts flown out from London, and we had to rebuild the engine in the middle of the Sahara.
You mean you guys had to just sit there for 2 weeks waiting for parts?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. What was that like? That's a movie, being stranded in the Sahara for 2 weeks.
Yeah, we were lucky that the other vehicle, the truck, was able to pull the bus into what was a refugee camp, basically, where there was nothing but a well. And it was surrounded by Tuareg refugees during a drought in the Sahara. So we spent 2 weeks there by the well.
You know, one of the things that you said in the information that I was looking through preparing for the interview, you talked about what a life-changing experience this whole trip was for you. How did this trip change you?
Well, I think it changed me in several ways. One, which was that I gained a lot of confidence in the fact that I could travel through, some very remote places and survive. And the second thing is I learned a lot about not only the countries that we went through, but the people and the culture. And it's the one thing I loved about Africa were the people. And probably the other thing that changed my life was the fact that I met my wife-to-be during the trip. She was also one of the people in the group.
That could not be more romantic, Jim. You know that, right?
Well, it was because we spent a month on a tropical island off the coast of Kenya, an island called Lamu, and it was a tropical paradise.
I think you're making everyone who's hearing us talk want to go to Africa and go through exactly what you went through. Did you get to go on a safari? Of course, the animals always have to come into your head whenever you're thinking about Africa. Did you go on safari and see some of the famous, the elephants and the lions and tigers and no bears, but oh my?
Oh, yes. In fact, the route that we took went through the Serengeti National Park in Tanzania and Amboseli National Park in Kenya. So we were sort of on our own safari. And you're right, we saw animals everywhere. And the nice thing about it was that we camped out the entire time. And at night sometimes you'd hear the lions roaring in the distance and the hyenas. It was amazing.
It sounds like it. I mean, I think you've transported me, and I hope our listeners, right there to all of the romantic ideals that I have about Africa. Did you have a particular audience in mind for this book?
The audience, to me, was were people like me that want to travel, that love, seeing places that are very remote, that you may not be able to get to today.
You know, the thing that struck me, I guess, I'm a former teacher, and so I tended to look at this and I tended to think about all of the parents and all of the teachers who are teaching in a very different way right now. And a book like this, I think, would be an excellent way to talk about Africa and to maybe use Google Earth and you go to Africa. I mean, you've divided your chapters. There are 11 chapters in the book. And for example, the first one is Seattle to Tangiers, and the subtitle is From the Known to the Unknown. I think that it would be cool for a geography teacher or even a parent to take that and go, okay, let's look at that route from Seattle to Tangiers. You started in Seattle. How do you get there? What do you cross? And sort of explore everything that you explored from an educational standpoint, and then bring in the animals and talk about the conservation efforts that are underway in Africa for the animals. I mean, my imagination just soared when I started reading your book. Your words, your prose is really wonderfully descriptive. And I went right there with you. I just think that there are so many things that people could do with a wonderful book like this, because this is based on your personal experiences and your personal diaries. So it's a very personal book, if you'll pardon the use of that word about four times in the same sentence. But that, to me, would give another individual a first-hand look at what we just talked about. You know, maybe you even talk about, when you talked about the climb of Kilimanjaro, you get a map of Kilimanjaro and you look at, well, how long did it take in the 4 days? And they did this and they did that. that just, you can tell you've really spurred my imagination with all of this. Thank you.
That's amazing, Suzanne. I hadn't thought about it, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it just struck me how many wonderful, I mean, you could take this whole book and a social studies teacher could almost do a whole unit just using your book and your personal experiences. And then even the cover, you talked about the CIA cover and that map of Africa, I think could be enlarged and you could use that and keep that in your classroom. I no longer teach, can you tell? But once you're a teacher, you never look at the world exactly the same way again. Now, you're also a photographer. Tell me about your photography. Are there pictures in the book that you took?
Yes, not only did I have a journal that I kept every day, but I had my camera with me and I tried my best to take photos along the way. There was only one time during the trip where I couldn't take photos, and that was the first weekend in Zaire because of government restrictions, unfortunately. But no, there are photos from everywhere along the way.
Oh, I love it. See, I think that makes it even more important. I know that our listeners must be going, come on, tell me where I can find this book. Amazon, of course, is the logical bookseller right now for almost everyone, and almost everyone goes to Amazon to find things. So I went this morning and checked to make sure that the book is there, and there it is, and it's very easy to find. Let me tell you what to put in the search feature to find it. Go to your Amazon. At the top, there's a search feature. Type in Travels with King Kong. Now, you can add Overland Across Africa if you want to, but Travels with King Kong by James, James Henderson, Henderson, and then just click on it, and the book comes right up, and you'll see that gorgeous map of Africa on the front. And then the upper right-hand corner, there's always a little look here that is up in that corner. And if you click on it, it, quote, opens the book. And you can read an excerpt from Jim's book. And it will take you to some of the places that he and I have talked about today. Is there somewhere else, if people don't want to go to Amazon, is there another place that they could find the book, Jim?
Yes, it's also available on the Barnes & Noble website. And it will be in the Barnes & Noble bookstores, hopefully, in the next month or so.
Oh, perfect. This would make a great Christmas gift. I mean, it really would. Now, your websites. Let's talk about, you have two websites. Tell me a little bit about both of those websites.
Well, the first website is what I call my personal website, and it's where I have some of my photography. Every year I write a Christmas letter, and so I post those on the website, and as well as books. So this book is on that website. It's jimh325.net.
Okay.
And what other website is my photography website, and I do have something about the book on that site as well. But most of it's my photography. So it's N as in names. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
It's N as in Nancy, L as in Lucy, dash, S in Sam, E as in Edward, .com.
Do you sell your photographs?
I would, but no. My professional photography right now is with real estate, so I do real estate photos.
Oh, interesting. Now, when our listeners close the back cover of the book, whether it's electronically and they've just finished and put the device down, or they buy the book physically and they close that back cover, what do you want them to leave with? Do you want them to leave with the feeling that they've just been through the most wonderful, amazing, personal adventure? Or is there something else that you want them to take away from the book?
Well, I would hope that after they've read the book, they'll have a better understanding about the land and the people of Africa, and it won't be such a mystery anymore. And it will be a place that they would love to go and visit.
Were you ever afraid during the trip?
No, there was one time when we were a bit anxious. I would say it was the first week when we were in Zaire, and we were in an area where the local people were not happy with us. And I came to believe that it was because of the war with Belgium that had just finished a few years before that. But otherwise, every day when we were traveling through these villages, people would always come out, they'd wave and they'd shout, and the kids would go wild. And my arm got tired after a while waving back, but it was a wonderful experience.
Well, you talk about the food, and you talk about how the villages looked, and you just describe all of that so well. I could just keep talking to you, Jim. I need to stop. I need to let you go. But this has been such an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for being my guest today on Books on Air and for sharing this wonderful adventure with us.
You're welcome, and thanks for inviting me, Suzanne.
Remember, you can find Travels with King Kong, Overland Across Africa by James Henderson, on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble. You've been listening to the Books on Air podcast brought to you on webtalkradio.net. You can also hear our podcast on iTunes as well as iHeartRadio. I'm Suzanne Harris, and I really hope that you'll join us for our next Books on Air podcast. Remember, you never know who's going to be here. Thank you so much for listening.